Welcome to the D Word, the UK's only weekly internet radio show that talks dementia, with me, your host, Peter Hill. Thanks for joining me. Good to be back here on the D Word after a great break in Canada. And a big thank you to Rebecca Churchyard, a former guest on the show, who gave me a tour around Canada's first care farm for people living with dementia in Ontario. Now this week on the show, I'm delighted to welcome back Beth Britton, MBE, who I last talked to some 4 years ago, which is far too long, but I'll be putting that right after this from the Jayhawks. Oh, 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 oh.
I'm going down tonight. We fed it on our skin, walking against the wind. Romeo and Juliet, that said we couldn't win. Oh, 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 oh. She don't know how she can win. She don't know where to begin. She's looking out for a friend. She's caught out in the darkness, keeping her head to the wall. Tell the joke, it made me cry. Too young to be alone, too old to feel home. Under the stars, who we are and all that we don't know. There on my sleeve, I wrap my jacket round your shoulders and I felt you breathe. If I could set you free, take you away with me, but I just drove you home and I watched you go. Cause I was only 17, chasing a basement dream, and we were keeping our heads above water, trying to learn how to swim, saying you're on.
One of my favourite bands, the Jayhawks, and keeping our heads above water. Well, it's been 4 years, so let's get on with it. is Beth.
Hi, Beth. It is great to welcome you back to the show. It certainly has been too long. You're an award-winning content creator, consultant, trainer, mentor, campaigner and speaker specialising in issues affecting older people, health and social care, and especially dementia. And you also are a fellow Arsenal fan.
I am. Hello, Pete. It's lovely to be back with you. So you've informed me in the build up to this. We were last together in August 2022. So I don't know how we've avoided each other for quite so long. This is not good, but I'm very glad to reconvene with you today and a particularly happy time for our Schooners. So,
absolutely.
Yes, great to be back.
And I saw the shirt that you had before. We won't go into football talk for the whole show, but I saw the shirt that you had with MBE and number 8 on the back.
Yeah, so number 8 is not significant from a player perspective. It doesn't mean I'm a massive Martin Odegaard fan, although I have no problems at all with Martin Odegaard. No, 8 was the number I always struggled to write as a child when I started primary school. And I had a lovely teacher who sat down with me, Mrs. Willis, and she sat down with me and really helped me to learn to get this lovely flowing number 8. So it only goes to prove, doesn't it, that our early childhood memories, they stick with us. I'm now in my mid-40s. There you go. There's a value of life story work right there. Number 8 is really important to me. It always has been. So, yes. And then MBE.
Belated congratulations on that. A serious point, we don't all do it for the awards and stuff like that, but it is really nice to be recognised, isn't it?
Oh, it was an amazing moment when the letter came. It was last year. I was in the King's Birthday Honours List in 2025, and the letter arrived. And I remember joking to my postie as he was sorting out a parcel. I said, "Oh, what have I done wrong now?" Because there was this official letter as I flicked through my mail. And then I looked at it a bit more closely, and I thought, the Cabinet Office. I don't think they write to you if you've been a bit naughty and done something you shouldn't. So I shut the door, opened the letter, barely read the contents, just the headline bits of it. Burst into tears, hugged my mum. She burst into tears, and yeah, the rest, as they say, is history. It was a lovely moment, 6 weeks to keep a secret. My daughter said to me, she said, "Mum, how do you keep a secret for 6 weeks?" I said, "Well, firstly, by not telling you." And then, of course, the announcement came out, and it was lovely. But the actual receiving of my MBE was quite a bittersweet moment, to be honest with you. My mum had had a fall the night before. Didn't realise at that point she'd broken her shoulder. We'd had it looked at, but not x-rayed. She wanted to carry on, and we did. And in many respects, I think we're glad we did, because you never know if you'd have postponed, if something would come along in the future. But my mum sadly has a fractured shoulder. And the irony of it all is I received the MBE from the Princess Royal, who of course is very heavily involved with Carers Trust. And she talked to me about being a family carer. And I'm very much plunged back into that now with my mum, because she needs a lot of help with everyday tasks. And I'm very much sort of tied to the house. So I come to you with the lovely glow of the recognition, but also very much at a difficult time in my life, really, because looking after my mum has brought back memories of caring for my dad. But I did that with my mum, and that was such a bonding experience for us. And now for it to be my mum, and also that she is now, I think, experiencing some symptoms that could be Alzheimer's as well, which we're going to have to get that investigated. So it's a very, it's a difficult point in the life of me at the moment, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Although, I've got to say, your dad would be very proud, looking at all you've achieved. I mean, when you first started out on that journey, I guess it wasn't in your wildest dreams you'll be there with the Princess Royal getting an MBE.
Oh, heavens no. No, no, no. So when Dad died, I began D for Dementia, my blog that I don't really update very much now. It's like once a year, which is just blocking suicide, really, isn't it? It's terrible. But I just wanted to share some of the things that had worked for us, and I fully intended on getting a job in some industry or other. I mean, I'd run a football blog many years before that, as you alluded to my love of football. And I just, that was my plan. I never intended on any of this. It was really speaking at a conference for a research charity, Brace, who I'm an ambassador for now, where a care provider sat in the audience. And he said to me after, he said, "My staff need to hear what you talked about." And that was for the first time where I realised that perhaps there was some value in the voice of lived experience. And obviously, as my experiences have dated because my dad died in 2012, I've been very much involved with meeting many people living with dementia in all different situations. So, from the advocates that we all know that you will have interviewed on your show, amazing people who speak so eloquently about the experiences that they have, and I've been lucky to work with many of them, but also people I've met in care homes, you know, people that nobody knows of, sure, obviously their family and those looking after them, and everyone has taught me so much. And now with what I'm seeing with my mum, more lessons again, and it just carries on in that cycle. But no, I never intended on, well, I don't think you can intend on an honour, can you? Unless perhaps you're David Beckham, I'm not sure. But I certainly it was a complete and utter shock, surprise. It was lovely. But I would say to anyone who's been shortlisted for many awards and never won one, I got outstanding contribution in 2024, but I'd been to many other award ceremonies before that where I'd won absolutely nothing. So yeah, it's not all been a rosy success story, shall we say. But it's not about the awards, it's about the people you help. That's what it means to me. That's why I do what I do. I love to help people.
And it's about that importance of lived experience, which I was saying to you before we came on air. I mean, this is show number 330 something. And in talking to people, what's come across probably more recently than a lot of things is these words like co-production and this kind of stuff, which to me has always seemed common sense. That listeners will know, in the early days, I went to the Dementia Action Alliance meetings. I was the guy in the corner sticking his hand up saying, "Isn't there someone missing?" And everybody looked at me and said, "What are you on about?" And I said, "Well, there's nobody here living with dementia. And they are the expert. I'm not an expert. They are because they're going through it."
Absolutely. And you know, everyone's experience is different. So even when you are putting it out and you are getting, you know, working with people with lived experience, you just have to bear in mind that that will only be one person's snapshot as well. So doing widespread co-production, getting lots of different views from people in different situations, younger people, older people, male, female, different, you know, different sexualities, different cultural backgrounds. You know, everyone's experience is so different, and it's why it's so important that we always include the voice of lived experience. And there's been this recent call for there to be 8 hours of mandatory training on dementia that was made by the Alzheimer's Society in the spring. And you know, that has to be underpinned by the involvement of lived experience. We've seen this in learning disability with the Oliver McGowan training, and I see it in my own work. I know you want to get on to talking about things I'm up to this year, and a particular piece of co-produced training is just so important to me and the people I'm working with on that at the moment, who are amazing. And I would just say to anybody, no matter whether you're doing service design, training design, conference design, whether you're writing about dementia, whatever you're doing, include the voice of lived experience and do that in a really meaningful way, not never in a tokenistic way.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, The station that makes you feel good.
Well, you've introduced it very nicely. So what are you up to?
What am I up to? Well, I'm up to all kinds of things, although some things that take me away from home are having to be paused at the moment, obviously, because of needing to support my mum. But lots of office-based stuff is going on. And my most exciting thing, which launches in September, is co-designed, co-delivered learning disability and dementia training. So this has been commissioned on the back of some loss and bereavement training, again, which was co-designed, co-delivered. I want to say we launched that 3 years ago, but it might be longer than that now. I'm not sure. Time flies when you're having fun, as they say. But it was launched, it was commissioned on the back of that. That became double award winning, our loss and bereavement training in 2024. And yeah, just very excited to be creating this with Jess, who lives with a learning disability, whose grandmother had dementia, who's done an awful lot of work in this space, and my lovely colleague Nicola Payne at McIntyre as well. So the three of us work together on this. Everybody is employed in creating this. So that's another important point when you're working with people with lived experience. They have to pay their bills too. So everybody needs to earn something out of the work that they do. That's really important. And Jess is employed to support us with this. And I'm just so excited to see how it's received by the health and social care sector. As I say, it's predominantly aimed at people supporting those with a learning disability who are more at risk of developing dementia. There's a particular synergy between Down syndrome and Alzheimer's. But, you know, people with a learning disability generally more at risk. They often develop dementia younger. Can be very difficult for mum or dad to have their adult child diagnosed with dementia. Lots of real complex feelings there as well. They might still be looking after their adult child at home as well. Youngest person I've met with a learning disability who was developing dementia was early 30s. So there's a lot of complexity that sits around this, and there's a great need for more information, advice and support. There are lots of fantastic resources out there. So what you can expect from the training is, apart from the fact it's co-designed, co-delivered, and you get Jess's wonderful input throughout, we've got lots of brilliant films, including many interviews that Jess has done with leading figures in the sector and people living with dementia and former carers as well. You can expect lots of interactive stuff. It's online, but it's definitely not going to be boring. It's not death by PowerPoint. Loads of resources to go and look at afterwards. So whatever your particular need is from the training, there will be resources for you to go and look at. And just really excited to get started with it. It is a bit of a monster. It's two sessions of 4 hours each, which then provides the 8 hours of training that was in that call that I mentioned earlier that the Alzheimer's Society made for everyone to have dementia training. So really looking forward to that. What else do I have on? So I host 20 webinars a year for Dementia Community.
Yeah.
So just cracking on through the year. They've been going brilliantly. Our biggest sort of sign up was around 600. So that was lovely to have so many people supporting one of our webinars earlier this year. Lots of exciting topics still for the rest of the year. Some important topics as well. We're going to look at frailty. We're going to look at incontinence again. So we definitely don't shy away from some of the more difficult things to talk about as well. I also, of course, am still presenting myself and sharing and teaching and all of that. So that's all continuing apace. Lots of writing going on. Probably not enough social media. If you follow me on social media, you're probably thinking, where is she? What's she doing? Answer is too busy to do it right now. But yeah, it all keeps me busy. And I've got two young children as well. And my mum. So yeah, it's a busy old life.
Absolutely. Only so many hours in a day, isn't it? Because, absolutely. You know, looking at the stuff with the dementia community, I was, you know, lucky enough to be on one of your webinars, which I thought was excellent. And the one thing is, when someone ever asks me about, is there something going on with this, something going on with that, something going on with that, then you're the go-to person, because I always think, well, Beth will know what's going on. And it kind of amazes me when you do your little bit with the dementia community and whatever, how do you find all this stuff and keep ahead of it all? Because there is so much going on.
I'm very lucky that I write the news for dementia communities. That naturally means that I need to be abreast of everything that's going on. I'm very well known, I guess, in the sector, so people do send me things when they're doing things, when they want stuff to be shouted about, they send it to me. Social media is a wonderful source. I really like LinkedIn personally. I find it really useful. And even if I'm not updating very much, I'm often looking at other people's stuff. I would do that a lot more than actually sharing my own things. And I think over the years, I guess I've seen myself as a bit of a signpost to Pete. I realised really early on that there was so much stuff out there that I wasn't aware of when my dad was alive. Then it transpired that other people, including professionals across health and social care, really didn't know about things as well. And actually, I think, all this good stuff and people don't know, and what a great crying shame that is. Particularly, I think about people's, for example, diagnosis experiences and how some simple prioritised signposting rather than a whole wodge of leaflets that you're never going to plough through because too busy if you're caring for the person, and you're probably too much kind of in shock and in coping mode if you're the actual person with a diagnosis. Nobody goes through it all. What you need is you need, like, what's your top three? What's your three go-to things right now? And if I had to pinpoint that for somebody from my knowledge, I would say it's things like contact Admiral Nurses, and there's so many different ways you can speak to an Admiral Nurse these days, from a nationwide clinic to the helpline to virtual appointments, and some really targeted support from Admiral Nurses now for different communities, different conditions. There's some brilliant help out there. I would say absolutely think about the environment. So already with my mum, and as I say, she's not at this point diagnosed, but just there's some little signs and some little things going up around our house. I write her notes. Her reading and writing is still really strong. So just making sure that I'm not, instead of constantly repeating myself, actually getting it down onto something tangible. And for my mum, that works. It wouldn't work for everybody. But some of that simple environmental stuff and some of those simple coping strategies are so helpful. And I think just, thinking about what you want to do with your life. I've said to my mum, because obviously with her broken shoulder, there's talk now about what her goal's going to be. What does she kind of want to get back to? But I'm a great believer in goal setting for people living with dementia. Having some clear ideas about actually, I really want to get back to doing that, or I really want to try doing this for the first time. I think that can really help and motivate at a time when actually, we all feel a sense of loss. I'm not gonna say you don't. I'm feeling there's quite a lot of loss in my life at the moment in many ways. And where you can find those little moments where you can actually produce something positive in your family, I think that's really important. So I do think there's so much good stuff out there. And I just think people don't know about it, and they should do. So Admiral Nurses, University of Worcester, environmental stuff, and probably my life, my goals. There you go. There's my top three things I would say. If you wanted to start with
Yeah.
something, start.
See that boy with that guitar? He got skinny legs, like I always wanted a girlfriend in this car. 'Cause he's got skinny legs, like I always wanted. My sister, look at me again. Well, you'd love me if I were as skinny as him. And I see that boy with that guitar. He got a shirt and tie like I always wanted. A girlfriend in this car. 'Cause he's got a shirt and tie like I always wanted. My sister, look at me again. Well, you'd love me if I were a dresser like him. And I see that boy with that guitar. He got a blue Toyota like I always wanted. A Japanese girl in his car. It's a blue Toyota like I always wanted. My sister, look at me again. Well, you'd love me if I were a driver like him. See that boy with that guitar. He got a baby face like I always wanted. A girlfriend in this car, 'cause he's got a baby face like I always wanted. My sister, look at me again. Well, you'd love me if I were a looker like him. And I see that boy with that guitar. He got a little round,
like I always wanted a girlfriend's car, cause he's got a little round, like I always wanted a sister, look at me again. Well, you'd love me if I had, well, like you'd love me if that were my real name. But legs, they come in, and faces go, just like old Toyotas. The Jap girl dumped my ass and stole my clothes. She took my car and left me singing. You see that boy with that guitar? He got skinny legs, like I always wanted a girlfriend's car. Cause he's got skinny legs, like I always wanted. Skinny legs, like I always wanted.
Skinny Legs from Lyle Lovett here on UK Health Radio, where all our shows are available for listen again and download from the website at www.ukhealthradio.com. Back to my chat with Beth.
I think it's that simplicity that cuts through all the stuff, because you see everything. You're getting bombarded with stuff left, right and centre. Someone once described the internet to me as being like having the keys to the biggest public library in the world and someone saying, look up when you've finished. The only problem with that analogy is there'll be some really good books in there, but there'll be some complete rubbish, to be honest, as well. And it's so difficult to sift between the two.
It is. And, you know, it could almost be like a library where nothing's been ordered either, because, you know, you can start with one search term and go down so many different avenues, and there's so many different places to find information, and so many organisations that and different startups that have come to me and said, oh, we're doing this because we don't think anyone's doing it. And I'm thinking, I'm not sure about that. And I'm sure you've had that as well, people who want to be on your show. You know, what I try and do with Dementia Community is I try and make it a real broad base of what we offer in terms of the news that we cover, which can be anything from sort of participating in different options of research and things like that, through to the latest reports or brilliant little initiatives or lovely resources that you can get involved with. Obviously, I do the webinars, which is a bit more of a deep dive into certain topics. And I try and really mix that up between health and social care topics for people as well. And our last one was on the arts, which was so uplifting. We had a fantastic gentleman living with dementia who came and shared some of his poetry and just things like that. I don't know, they just uplift me, they make me smile. I couldn't stop myself smiling. But we also have a resources repository on Dementia Community's website, an events listing of all the events that I find that are going on. So there's lots of good stuff, and it's all free. And that's, I think, really important. I don't think we should be sitting things like this behind a paywall. It should be for everybody to have a chance to find out stuff.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And what you were saying about being able to smile, because, you know, it can be a very dark subject, and one that, you know, we've talked a lot on the show about just the use of humour and providing it is directed in the right way. I mean, during my time working for the Alzheimer's Society, I heard some of the best one-liners I've ever heard in my life, working with, you know, my group members living with dementia. So we shouldn't shy away from smiling and humour as long as it's correctly done.
Absolutely. And I mean, even as I say, thinking about my recent experiences in my house, you know, my mum will sometimes make a joke about something she's remembered or done, or, you know, so yeah, there, you have to try and find those lighter moments. It is really hard, particularly when you're grappling with worries and concerns, and you naturally do think ahead. You shouldn't. I always say to everyone, live in the moment, but our natural human inclination is to think ahead, and you do think to that the end and what that's going to look like. And in my case, obviously, I've been through that with my dad, so my brain has really been on fast forward, and sometimes it's really hard to pull yourself back. And I think it's good sometimes to acknowledge emotion in all kinds, in all spheres. You have to allow some space for some tears and some difficulty as well, and that might be something really private for you. I've definitely been through those moments quite recently, but also, yeah, having those lighter moments and celebrating the little wins is really, really important.
Absolutely. Let's get a little controversial. I'm sure you won't mind.
Controversial?
There's been I view Down as a fellow dementia rebel like me, actually, in certain respects, and I mean that with the greatest respect. There's been a bit of talk, I've stoked a bit of it up on LinkedIn, and other people have as well, about the fact that the most prominent question that anybody ever gets asked is what's the difference between Alzheimer's and dementia? And we seem to have this thing whereby, Dr. Alzheimer in 1908 did a lot of work and he thought, well, I'll name this after me, which is fair enough when you've done the amount of work he'd done. But if he'd kind of looked into it about 100 years earlier, there was a French scientist who'd started to use the word dementia. And if the word dementia would have been used first, Alzheimer's would have come underneath as a type of dementia, like we have with cancer. And we wouldn't be in this big mix we're in at the moment. And just to throw another curveball in, the medics now have gone for major neurocognitive disorder, which it's a muddy bond that's just totally confusing.
It is, and when I train it as dementia as an umbrella term and the different types that sit underneath. And the reason I think I alluded earlier to the fact that I think my mum has Alzheimer's is because I think that's the hallmarks of what I'm seeing in what I'm seeing with my mother. If I thought I was seeing Lewy body dementia or frontotemporal or something else, I'd name it as what it is. So I think it is that subtype diagnosis is so important because people are affected differently by different types of dementia. And knowing the subtype will enable you to provide more tailored support. It'll also provide for you, whether you're a family carer or a professional, an understanding of why you're seeing something the way you're seeing it. And you can say, actually, do you know what? This is probably as a result of the person's dementia, or we think it's a result of something else, you know. So I think that's really important in learning disability services. The chances of a subtype diagnosis are considerably less than what they are in mainstream dementia services. So you've got a better chance of getting a subtype. But I think we're wrong to blur the lines. I think we all use that generalized dementia term. Your show's the D word, isn't it? We're all using that generalized term. But I think in the diagnosis sphere and in the support sphere, it's incredibly important that we understand which type of dementia and then to try and tailor our support for the person. Because we know, for example, memory is not the major problem for some types of dementia. You know, people with frontotemporal dementia can have excellent memory through to the end of their life. Whereas in Alzheimer's, of course, the memory tends to go, you know, more quickly than that. My dad had vascular dementia. Really important to know that because, of course, the medication is not licensed for vascular dementia. So my dad was never able to have any of that medication. And one of the reasons I would think that I would like, you know, to get this, what I'm seeing with my mum checked is the possibility that she could, if I am right, and it is Alzheimer's, to try a medication to see if that will slow things down a little bit. So, it is really important, and it does infuriate me that people blur the lines. And you know what? Really worryingly, Pete, what I heard a few months ago, I think it's a fairly well-known training initiative that goes around the UK, and they do a little preamble before they get into the main training experience. And they were actually blurring Alzheimer's and dementia quite terrifyingly inaccurately. And so that's not very good, is it, if you're training people? That's even worse than in public messaging.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's so many signs of confusion. In fact, what you just mentioned, quite rightly, is that dementia and memory are put together in the public consciousness. And probably because you said, well, where did you get diagnosed? Well, I went to the memory clinic. Well, wait a minute, you know, it's not everything. But I think going on to the one thing that could pull a lot of this together, I spoke to a colleague in Canada 3 or 4 weeks ago on the show, and she was looking at a study of different countries and how they treat dementia and various things. And the UK was left out. She said, well, I'm really sorry, we couldn't study the UK because we were looking at dementia strategies and you haven't got one.
Well, no, in England we don't have one.
Yeah.
Scotland do have plans, individualized, plan around dementia. We don't have one in England. No, it's all been the modern service framework, frailty and dementia. Now that in itself is controversial because of course frailty is very much considered to be something that older people have, which is not entirely accurate because you can be a younger person and become clinically frail. But just for the sheer sort of stigma and that ageist problem that we have in dementia care, I think it's a mistake to personally put the two together. And you think to yourself, well, how are younger people going to feel? It's hard enough to get a diagnosis when you're a younger person. You're often misdiagnosed if you're a woman. Oh, it's the menopause. If you're a male, female, binary, whatever. Oh well, you're just depressed. It can be very difficult to get that diagnosis. So, actually, for people to really, understand what we're talking about, it's incredibly difficult, isn't it? And I just think lumping this in with frailty is a bad idea. I think dementia has to sit on its own, and we have to appreciate that it affects all age groups, obviously predominantly older people, but it can go all the way through to the childhood dementias as well. So I think lumping it with frailty personally is a mistake.
Yeah, and I think, you know, generally, in terms of what we've got, in terms of signposting, you alluded a little earlier on in the fact that you talk to people who say, well, I've got this great idea, can we do this? And you think, well, wait a minute, I actually know someone who's already doing that. And when we get to the kind of top level with government looking down, if you're a minister, you must see the Alzheimer's Society, okay, through a name and think, well, does that only deal with Alzheimer's? Or does that deal with other dementias? You see Dementia UK and think, does that deal with Alzheimer's? And then suddenly you get the major charities all writing separate letters saying the same thing. And to be really controversial, in that time, we need to get everybody together and just one message.
Oh, that's blue sky thinking, isn't it? That's not going to happen. I mean, it wasn't that many years ago that I think there wasn't brilliant working relationships between the chief executives of the time. I don't know how things are now. I don't really work with any of the major. I certainly signpost, and I have colleagues within all of the major charities. I have Admiral nurses that come and present webinars. I have a warm relationship. I try and keep a warm relationship with everybody. But I think there is a lot of blurring of the lines. And then obviously you've got the smaller charities, like for example Lewy Body Society, who are trying to champion Lewy body dementia, saying actually we think this is the most underdiagnosed dementia that, out there, and actually why aren't we thinking about it more? So there certainly needs to be more joined up thinking, and I think the government would be I think it would be a brilliant idea if the government started to have champions living with dementia to help enforce their dementia to help inform their dementia work. I think that would be incredibly helpful, and also family carers' perspectives into that as well. I think when you closely align with any particular charitable organisation, it's very difficult to then have a really even and fair spread of opinion. I mean, all the charities are trying to fundraise for what they do, aren't they? So, you need independence, and maybe I should put a shout out for dementia community because it is independent. And we're all freelancers that work for them. As you know, I'm independent, Pete. I've deliberately kept myself that way. I've had job offers over the years. I've never wanted to align with only one organisation. I think I have a lot more quality to offer everybody in this space. If I'm across everything, I think that's a much better way to go.
Oh, absolutely, 100%. That goes for the D word as well. We will talk to anybody about anything. But that was just one of the areas that I felt, it just makes life a little more confusing. And also the other thing you were saying a little bit earlier about the dementia community, everything is free. Don't want to put anything behind a paywall. And yet we often see conferences about dementia and various things. I'm a guy who's doing this in his front bedroom. I can't afford 200 quid to go and attend. And people living with dementia get some kind of derisory offer. Oh, it's only 50 quid for you. Well, really, it should be totally free.
Yeah, and so the Dementia Community Free Offer is certainly everything that's on the website is short of the Journal of Dementia Care, which is a journal. It has a cost implication. The events they do run Dementia Congress, that does have a cost implication as well, just because obviously you've got to book a venue. I do agree with you. Some of the conferences are generally very expensive. And also, how often do we still see programs about dementia where there aren't people living with dementia on the bill, on the billing for that? That isn't the case with Congress, but I would have to be fair and say Congress does have a cost implication just because of the venue. I'm not involved in the planning of that this year, short of supporting with some of the communications around it. But I think it would be great to see a lot more events where people, with lived experience are front and centre. And also, ultimately, online events do help people to come together, without the cost implications and the difficulties of travelling, overnight accommodation. As I mentioned earlier, right now I'm not going out to do anything that takes me out of the house for any length of time because of my mum. And there'll be many people who are in that position, whether it's through caring responsibilities, childcare responsibilities. People can't get to these things and network and socialise. And those kind of hybrid offers or those online offers, I think, are really important to people. And that's why I'm really proud of the webinar program, because it does enable people to come together for an hour, when no matter where you are, and you could be abroad, and be part of that. So for me, that's important, and that we share quality news, quality messaging, that the resources and events listings are there as well. And yeah, and then of course there's all my wider work for all the other people I work for as well, and all the stuff I do. And yeah, you can, when I get round to it, you find it on my website or you find it on LinkedIn or whatever, but I don't update them often enough.
Well, as we said earlier on, there's not enough hours in the day to do that. Sadly, we're running out a bit of time, but you mentioned blue sky thinking. Here goes a bit then. Recently, we had the very, very well done documentary on Jon Snow, who's a terrific journalist, a media person. Ultimate blue sky thinking. Get Jon Snow in number 10 with whoever is our new prime minister. And you've got lived experience, you've got the skill of journalism, which he undoubtedly has still got, and you've given a really massive message, surely.
That would be really exciting, wouldn't it? And I can say from working at UK Dementia Congress last year, I met Andy Burnham. He came to speak. His father has dementia, and he spoke very eloquently, and I found him a very personable person to meet and greet and briefly chat to. So we will see what he delivers if he is to be the next incumbent of number 10. But yes, I agree with you. I think someone like Jon Snow, and there are many others. I mean, many people, you will be aware of people, who live with dementia, who've had some very important roles in their communities, whether they've worked for in the justice system, whether they've worked in the education system, whether they've been in the healthcare system. So there are many people across many different spheres who sadly do go on to develop dementia, and who all have something to offer. John, obviously, a high profile example of that. I think it's just important that we learn from and we understand what good policy looks like, but then importantly, we implement that and it becomes streamlined, because how many people have a different experience depending on where they live, the postcode lottery, and that is not acceptable and it never will be. And that's something that desperately needs to be addressed by any incoming prime minister, as well as obviously the complete crisis of social care, which we will not have time to go into now. But if we're going to talk politics, you couldn't possibly ignore that. Obviously, Baroness Casey has made some remarks around social care and around dementia already as she progresses the work of her commission. But I do think, you know, we seriously need to have a look as a country. I have experiences in my own extended family at the moment of how difficult obtaining social care for someone who really is quite poorly actually is. And it's terrifying that since 2012 and the struggles we had for my dad, really things are no better. For some people they're worse, and that's terrifying.
But it gives you incentive to carry on and hopefully change
to carry
things,
on. And the lovely
doesn't
thing
it?
to bring it full circle back to the beginning, that one of the lovely things about the MBE is that people do maybe think about what I do a little bit differently, and they kind of look me up and they want to engage, which means you get a chance to talk about some of these important messages and hopefully try and encourage people to think about things like the co-production and the different positive ways that they could actually approach what they are planning to do for the future, no matter what it is, whether it's research, policy, frontline delivery of services, whatever it might be.
Well, Beth, it's been a pleasure, as always. We won't leave it so long next time. And you are very much our go-to person for what's going on in the world of dementia. And, you know, one day we might get you in number 10 talking to Andy Burnham. That'd be good.
Yeah, that's funny. Again, when you get one of these honours, they write to you from the department. And I was so busy at the time, I didn't write back. I did almost think to say to them, you know, would you like a bit of advice around what you're doing with dementia? Maybe I should have done, but yeah.
Absolutely. I don't think I could find anyone better. Keep on doing what you're doing, and thank you so much for being my guest.
Thank you, Pete.
Thanks to Beth. Always great to chat to her, and I definitely won't leave it so long next time. You can keep in touch with Beth at bethbritton.com. And I know she wouldn't forgive me if I didn't say, come on, you Gunners. That's all for this week. Thanks to Angela, my production assistant. Next time, my guest will be Christopher Hall, author of the Forget-Me-Not Chronicles. So until then, thanks for your company, and take care now.